You're watching New Sound Wave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XV, Lady Rick, Gweebum, with Rob Springer.
So this, of course, is the video game podcast of Radio Free Cybertron, which is our, you know, website, tfradio.net. We have lots of podcasts. Our flagship show is Radio Free Cybertron, which is a Transformers podcast, but we have lots of stuff. If you just happen to be finding this, realistically, like 99% of our listeners listen to Radio Free Cybertron, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. So, I got Peter here. Peter's awesome. John actually calls him Peter AKKK Weebum, but I consider that racist, so I'm not going to do that.
Well, he can say it.
I have JD Church, who is host of Fanboy Versus, our comic book podcast, and you know, prodigious in other pursuits as well.
Mr. Booster Gold himself.
Yes.
Yes. Yay pictures.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about that this weekend.
I have Rob Springer, who is today is his birthday.
Hi.
He's 14.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Happy birthday. We wish you happy birthday while you went to go pee.
Good, good, because I wouldn't pee, dude.
And we also have Chris Triplett. Chris, how's it going?
Good.
Chris is not normally on I want to say Fanboy Versus, because he's on Fanboy Versus.
He is normally on Fanboy Versus.
He's not normally on normally. Soundwave. He is a regular.
I used to be.
That is true. You used to be.
Back in the old days.
Back in the old days.
Is it's that sad back that when I hosted and it sucked?
It's sad that we can say old days of New Soundwave. But God, this is episode 73. We've been doing this for a year and a half.
Yeah.
3DS.
I know. Yes. But, there were those dark days, Triplett, when I hosted this show. Remember that?
Triplett is the proud owner of a Nintendo 3DS, and we're going to talk about that quite a bit because the Nintendo 3DS, of course, came out this week.
Exorcise the demons.
I'm looking forward to getting one. I don't yet have one, however. So let's go ahead and jump into things this week. Since JD's on, I'm going to move this around. You wanted to talk about the Best Buy buyback program. You took advantage of that recently.
So did this a couple weeks ago. Best Buy, everybody's familiar with like video game buyback programs, you know, like GameStop and a couple other places have like used game buyback programs. My experience up to this point has been I find a bunch of games that I don't like anymore and I take them to GameStop and GameStop looks at them and looks at me and says, no. And I end up just taking them home and putting them in a stack. But we have been redeemed. Best Buy has started a buyback program. Couple of cool things about it. One, I had a bunch of old titles, and I mean crap titles, like a Gundam turn-based fighting game. Like a crap game.
Why did you have that?
A dollar for it. And, I mean, a lot of titles that I had were like PS2 titles or titles that I didn't play anymore. And they were at least a dollar, if not $2. Some of the larger titles, like the first Modern Warfare game, I think I got like 10 or 15 for that game. You take it in and, you know, they tell you the value or whatever and give you a gift card for it. That's it. It's super easy, super simple. Now, here's the best part. If you have an Android or iPhone, there is a Best Buy gaming app. If you download the app, it has a barcode scanner in it. You can scan your games at home, and it will tell you what the value is before you take them into the store.
Neat.
That's pretty cool.
Booyah.
Yeah. So I was, like, going crazy. I'm, like, going over my video game collection, like, boog, dollar, sweet.
Yeah. I have to say, Triplett and I, our local video game store, which just closed down recently for a reason. Actually, no, that's not true. But it just closed down. The guy would buy anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I could sell Sega Genesis games. I could sell original Game Boy games, and he would buy them. And he would give me at least a couple bucks for them.
It was a pretty cool store, except for he wanted, like, insane amounts for stuff that was worthless.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, actually, the thing is, he was doing really good business. just not as good as his day job, and he decided it was either his day job or this, so he quit doing the store. But, you know, even buying crap games for, like, $2 or $3 a piece, he was doing a pretty good... He was doing a pretty good business, and the reason is he was catering to gamers, people who actually played games. And, you know, Best Buy, of course, you know, caters to moms and pops and aunts and uncles who want to go in and buy stuff for their you know, family. But this guy actually had a pretty good – he was fostering sort of this local gaming culture that it's sad that we no longer have. But, yeah, but that's great. Most people do – most companies do screw you out of everything or just won't give you anything.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I used to work for Best Buy. I do not work there anymore, but – Best Buy has done a lot to try to up their gaming angle. I mean,
yeah, the gaming magazine that they put out and everything. Yeah, totally.
They have another thing. Like, if you're familiar with Best Buy's like Reward Zone program, there's a sub program that's absolutely free to sign up for. That's the Reward Zone Gamer program. And for like every $150 in gaming products that you buy, you get $10 in certificates. So it's like a lot faster than like their regular points program. But the great thing about this is, especially for Best Buy, is that you can bring those games in. Even if it's a crap game, they give you a dollar for it. They can put it back on their shelf for $2, still make money. Plus, they're getting traffic out of it and stuff as well. And you get a gift card. So,
and there's nothing wrong with having stuff on your shelf that, you know, especially things like that aren't easy to find because there's someone who wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like you mentioned, like some obscure turn-based Gundam game, somebody out there would want to buy that, and they're going to have a hard time finding it. So it's either go to eBay and spend, you know, a dollar for the game and $4 for shipping, or go to Best Buy and pay $2 for it.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, one also thing is it probably save you a lot of anger, like being at GameStop and they're like, no, we can't take this. You can't take a Final Fantasy with all those M&M racers on the wall in the used section.
Well, and like I said, that's been my experience with GameStop, where it's like you take in games, even fairly current games, and they're like, no, we can't give you anything for that. And you have to take it into the store before you even know that. Versus like this, where it's like, I mean, most, you know, a good number of people have an Android or an iPhone. And I think you can even do it off the website as well. Like, you can type in the barcode. So,
I was going to say, I got a question about the Best Buy buyback program. Is it just on newer stuff? Like, you know, GameStop now limits you to, what is it, 360 and PS3 and maybe PS2? Are they still stocking PS2? Does Best Buy limit you?
No, I mean, like I said, most of what I took in were PS2 titles.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's at least PS2. I think I gave away to Brian, actually, the last of my PS1 games.
He did.
So, I don't have those to test. But, we move on. I can look it up. But, I wouldn't be surprised if they would take PS1 titles, especially since they still play on PS2s and they still sell PS2s.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Triplett, you picked up I got a chance to touch it. I didn't get the chance to play anything, but you picked up the 3DS on Sunday.
Yes.
Now that you've had a few days to play with it, what are your thoughts? You still just have Ridge Racer, or did you pick up anything else?
Nah, the games are very expensive, I think. Ridge Racer cost me $40. $40 for basically a game that
Came with my PS1 in 1996.
Huh?
It's the same game, basically, that came with my PS1 in 1996.
And this is sort of like a Greatest Hits version, because it's got tracks.
They're all Greatest Hits versions. That's the problem with the Ridge Racer series.
Well,
but I love it.
They keep adding tracks to it, but this one's like the new Greatest Hits version. But I've only got that. I'm kind of waiting to see if there's anything good else that's going to come out for it. I think it's just going to be a long wait. I mean, I kind of want Street Fighter, but just because it's supposed to look gorgeous. But I kind of don't want to play Street Fighter on a handheld.
I can understand that. But I mean, with Nintendo handhelds, oftentimes really it is a waiting game for something worthwhile to come out. I mean, I got it. I was launched on a DS. I got it the launch DS when it came out. I got it pre-ordered, I think, actually.
Oh yeah,
and I had it for a year, and I had one game, and I had that Metroid Prime Hunters demo that came with it. I ended up selling it to our friend Rich for like $100. And then games that I wanted started coming out for it.
Yeah, when the DS came out, what was it like? Was it like Nintendogs or something? It was like the first big system sale or Ford. I mean, prior to that, I mean, there was like nothing, right? For like months and months.
That's like a good five games for the longest, yeah.
Yeah, I had Mario 64 DS, and that was it.
Mm. I think the 3DS has a better launch. I mean, it's got good games. It's just there's like Pilot Wings is supposed to be decent, but I don't care about Pilot Wings, so I'm not going to pick that up. It's got Ridge Racer. Ridge Racer is pretty good. I mean, I like
it. What do you think about the 3D technology? That's the big selling point of the system. What do you the real selling point is that it's Nintendo's next handheld. If you want to buy Nintendo handheld games, you're going to have to buy a 3DS. But the hook that they're trying to get people to adopt early is the 3D. How is that working out for you?
Well, it works. It's 3D, but it's like it's not like coming off the screen 3D. It's sort of like. Remember, like, the hologram cards you used to get with, like, trading cards back in the 90s?
Is it kind of like that? Remember
actually.
Valiant Vision? Is it like that? Remember Valiant Vision, the 3D glasses that went in and separated the colors? Is it working kind of like that?
I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. It's like when I play Ridge Racer, and I don't know how it is on other games, but when I play Ridge Racer, it's like the car is sort of in the foreground, like in front of you, and then the background
looks
like it's pushed farther back, and then there are objects in the background that come forward. So it's like different objects in the game or in different spaces.
It sounds like it's like enhanced parallax. Like if it's like what you would if back in the 90s, what you'd have imagined a portable Sega Genesis would have been like.
It's not like like seeing like a movie, like you know the new 3D movies. It's not like seeing that. It's more like this just looks really kind of nice. You know, like when in Ridge Racer you were racing and then like you'll get fly past like. Trees and then the leaves will be hitting the screen as you're going, and they almost look like they're about to hit you. And like I said, you know the background.
You bob
like
and weave and dodge.
Well, you don't feel like dodging or anything, but it's just it kind of like creates an effect that makes it stand out, so it just looks like a little bit better. In fact, without the 3D, this Ridge Racer would not be a very pretty game because it's basically it looks like the PSP game which came out like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And this is a system that's like out in 2011. I don't know what that says, that, hey, it basically looks about the same as the game that came out 6 years ago. But the 3D, it's really hedging on that to make it stand out. And I think it does pretty good for this game. That's part of the reason why I kind of want Street Fighter, because it looks pretty much like the game that's on 360 and PS3, and without you know a couple of things that are different about it.
Yeah.
So basically, when we get some games that they put a little more effort into, it might show it off a little better, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one thing I'm kind of worried about, though, is how are they going to make 3D be like a compelling gameplay mechanic? You know, like how Nintendo takes their new idea, their new gimmick, and then they make it like a compelling gimmick to work in a game? Like, I can't think of a good example, but like, you know, like on the Wii, when they went to the Wii, and then you have the controller. Wii Sports, I guess, is the best example. You know, using it to play all the different mini games. There's nothing in Ridge Racer that feels like, well, you have to play it in 3D. Maybe Nintendogs has something. I'm not sure. I'm not getting it. I have no interest in getting it. But maybe the next. I mean, they announced some Mario games coming. Maybe we'll get something with it where you have
to use
a
hook.
The 3D.
Yeah, it's like a hook that makes you do it. Kind of like how if I want to play Kinectimals, I've got to use my Kinect.
But then again, you can turn the 3D off, so why would they make a game that has compelling gameplay around the 3D when you can just turn it off?
Well, there's, you know, a lot of times Nintendo will do something like, what was that game where you could actually, it was the Legend of Zelda game, to where you could have Tinkle running around doing crap for you?
That was Wind Waker.
It was optional. But it wasn't required, so you could.
Are you talking about the Wind Waker thing where you could attach
your
Game Boy Advance to your GameCube or something? Yeah,
I mean that was to help sell that you know interoperability between the Game Boy Advance and the GameCube.
And it failed. It didn't work
exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, I
do. I have my.
Yeah, there it is, over there. I need to play that. I hooked up my GameCube a couple days ago. It's hankering for some playing. So, but would you? It's $250 plus $40 or more for the games. I mean, would you recommend someone get it at this point or wait?
It's a bit pricey. I don't see it going down in price anytime soon. So if you get it now, or if you get it, say, like Christmas time, I think you're still going to pay $250 for it.
But I mean, but is there enough games to warrant the purchase of the system?
Depends on what you want. I mean, do you want a game that's one of these games that are at launch right now? But most of these games, it seems like they're just rehashes of games that already exist. Like the Pilotwings game, I think, is basically just. I think they take the Resort Island from the second Wii Sports and you just add Pilotwings to it. Street Fighter, same Street Fighter we've got. Rayman, I think it's the same Rayman game, just added a layer of 3D. I told you about Ridge Racer, it's the same. I don't think there's really anything. I mean, even Nintendogs, it's like we already had Nintendogs, but you know, now you've got cats. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know? This makes me kind of. I'm kind of surprised by that, you know, Nintendo did not do a full blowout for their first party developers. I'm kind of surprised by that.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking that basically it's just they're selling this based on Nintendo. It's like, hey, this is new Nintendo hardware. You should buy it because of that. And when sales dip, then they put out the game.
Nintendo really hasn't blown it out, though, with launch titles since the NES.
Yeah, it's always been a few months later. Here's the killer app.
Exactly.
Twilight Princess was a rare situation. That game was done already.
It was already done.
So, I mean, that just fell into their lap when they did the Wii. I mean, all these other systems, they've not ran into a situation like that.
Well, the Super NES had Mario World, and N64 had Mario 64. The GameCube had nothing.
No, it took it like forever.
Hey, I liked Rogue Squadron.
Rogue Squadron was good. Yeah, it was.
But was Factor 5 a subsidiary of Nintendo, or was that...
No, that was a LucasArts game, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
LucasArts.
Yeah. So that was that's a third-party title.
But, I mean, it was a launch title worth a darn.
I mean, they have Luigi's Mansion, and nobody really cared about Luigi. I kind of like Luigi's Mansion just because it's Ghostbusters-ish. Yeah. But other than that... it's a good game.
So, their president of Nintendo of America, said, Phil's... AIM told Joystick that the 3DS launch event Nintendo's had a shortcoming as far as downloadable games are concerned, and that they'll do a better job with the 3DS. I can understand what they're saying. I mean, what they've done with the Wii compared to like the other systems, it's been pretty mediocre as far as the selection goes. Has the DSi, Rob, you've got a DSi, there's not a wide variety of downloadable titles for that?
The downloadable titles are there's a few gems, but not really make you care enough to do it, you know. So if they're really going to work on this and make them better for the 3DS, which, you know, they're already saying old Game Boy games, then they're on the right track. Because that's one of the things people are like, old Game Boy games, DSiWare, but, you know, it's all original productions.
I mean, the only thing I've downloaded on my Wii is Virtual Console. I also downloaded that Dr. Mario DX game, or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And that's only because Kim wanted to play it. I haven't played a single, new title for the Wii, and there hasn't been a huge selection of them. But on the other hand, I download all sorts of crap for my 360 because, you know, Nintendo does a great job of not Nintendo, the other companies do a great job of, you know, encouraging people to develop. Yeah. Where Nintendo really hasn't. Nintendo's actually caught some flack recently from talking smack about how iOS and Android puts out so much crap. Yeah. And actually, the developer of Angry Birds said, you know, they hit back this week when they said that, Nintendo, they would feel like they were in an awkward position, too, if, you know, they were selling, you know, pieces of crap in a plastic shell for $49.
You know, that's it's also another thing is that the way just Nintendo has their console layout, right? You boot it up and... They're these separate. They work just like apps. They're each separate apps, right?
Yeah.
Versus when you go onto Xbox Live, I don't know about PS3 because I haven't experienced it enough. But you go to Xbox Live, you pop it up, boom, it opens up. It's like it is Consumption City. It just tells you, hey, check out this game that just came out. You know, check out these videos. You know, you got Netflix. Here's the movies that you can buy, and here are the games that you can get. You know. What's new in the... they have videos. You know, they have this huge production quality saying, these are some arcade games, you know, Xbox Live arcade games that just came out that may be worth your while.
Well, you know,
and they really push a lot. They provide a lot of backing to their indie developers.
Well, PS3, I mean, it's very similar, but also, I mean, let's keep in mind that I think Nintendo has realized that the Wii is sort of that all-age, all-inclusive platform, and that's been to its credit as much as its detriment, because just like you said, I think they've tried to keep it clean and separate and, you know, go to this if you want this, go to this if you want this, and it's not been that in your face. So it is a little bit harder to navigate to some of those things or to actually see it. Like, you have to want to go see those things in order for it to be there. I think in some ways that's a credit, because for a non, like, gamer, what we consider to be a traditional gamer, we expect to be overloaded with that kind of stuff. But for a grandma, you know, that might not be
you know
what they want.
To even coming from the Nintendo fanboy here, saying it honestly, they're always kind of one step behind when it comes to these things. Either they don't want to jump ahead and try it out, or they want to see how it gauges out. Like online gaming, they're like, well, yeah, there's going to be online gaming for the GameCube. No, there's not.
Yeah, let's see how Xbox works. They are ridiculously far behind on online gaming. Yeah.
They do this. They're like, let's see how it works out for them. Okay, this is how our version is going to work.
We've had online gaming since the 1990s.
Yeah, they it's like, okay, optical media. Do we have to?
Optical media wasn't
what works, apparently.
I hate to say it. Nintendo was right, though, as far as the media goes. They were just wrong at the time. Optical media was a format for its time, but it's not the format of the future. Honestly, now I would rather buy a game on a cartridge than on a disc.
Yeah.
For the access times and things like that. It's just that cartridges have historically been cost prohibitive, but you can, with compression and the like, you can accomplish nearly as much on a cartridge as you can on a disc. But the quality is, as far as like access times, it's so much better.
Well, not to mention just the real world working of it. Drop a CD, what's going to come out of your mouth? Shit, crap.
Yeah.
And then you check it. Okay, it's okay. Drop a cartridge.
And you
just pick it up. Yeah, that's it.
But I mean, they've been pretty much been on par with the other companies, though, as far as downloadable content is concerned. As far as the not the quantity of it, but the technology, and that's really where it's at, where it's going to go.
Reggie also said at some point, I think it was last week or whatever, and I think this is what really kind of steamed up Angry Birds guy, was basically saying, we're not really looking to be a platform for some guy in his garage making a game. We're, you know, trying to be a legit system for big companies and all that. And I think that's what also kind of steamed them up a little, because it's like, yeah, well, it's $50 for another version of Tetris, blah, blah, blah. Our fad is going to take the world by storm, you know.
They're different markets. I mean, yeah. I don't personally give a rat's.
To be fair, though, I really don't think I need a fart app on my DS.
That's true. That's true. There's a lot of crap out there on iOS and Android, and it's hard to get through it. But I mean, as far as, you know, people said, well, you know, Steve Wozniak developed Apple, you know, in his garage, blah blah blah. But you know, that's few and far between.
Yeah, that was also the 1970s when that's where computing took place.
Yeah.
Well. Okay, but there's a little bit different between like a garage, like what we would consider to be a garage developer, and then a non, like, corporate developer. I mean, there are a lot of small game developers, and by small, I mean like 30 to 50 people, as opposed to, say, you know, like an actual gaming company like EA or something, which is a corporation and they have several branches and things. So some of these games are being developed by smaller developers, but that doesn't mean it's a guy in his garage. I mean, they're legitimate gaming companies. They're just not affiliated with like a major developer.
Yeah.
I think one of the big things is because, like they said, the quality, there's not a lot of quality, but people stop and say, hey, garage development, you know, whoa, what's wrong with it? It's like, the big difference is, this isn't the late 70s where Atari was a bunch of hippies working in a warehouse, you know, and, you know, Sierra Online was a guy, some wife's husband who's like, okay, I'll make the game, and then we sell them door to door. It's a multi-billion dollar industry 30, 40 years later. Nintendo, once again, they're like, we don't want to put out the stuff that comes on Sundance Channel. We want the stuff that's on HBO.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here's different markets. I mean, the difference between Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft, and you know, the like a 99-cent app on iPhone is I expect 99 cents worth of value out of the app. I expect $50 to $70 worth of value out of a cartridge, out of a game from Nintendo or Sony. Where like Uncharted 2, you will never have on iPhone. Chris and I'm pointing to that, and I don't even have it. But I mean, one of the best gaming experiences I've had the last couple of years is playing Uncharted 2. It's amazing. It's a AAA title, but it's a AAA title that comes at a price where I don't expect it. Yeah, I don't expect to get that for something that's free or a dollar on iPhone.
Not to mention, let's stop and think of the attention span that still goes through your phone. How many deep dwelling conversations have you had on a text?
Exactly.
It's something you use for a few minutes, you put down. It's like, I'm in the bank. Okay, the bird is flying at the pig. All right, this is fun. Oh, cool, it's my turn. DS. You know what? Let's just jump back DS, Game Gear. How many people are still playing Pokemon Blue? You know, there's a longevity out of it. They put time, serious timing into it. I don't even like doing the hardcore gaming thing because that's just some guy in an Affliction shirt trying to feel better about him. So I'm just saying, when it comes to actual gaming as a hobby versus it's taking longer for my dentist appointment than normal. Oh, hey.
But then, I mean, doesn't that go back, though, and say that that's why Nintendo is wrong? Because doesn't the Wii, by its standard, doesn't it appeal to non-traditional gamers? So isn't something like Angry Birds like the perfect game for Wii? I can get Angry Birds on my PS3. I'm not going to play it on my PS3, but like my mom would love to play Angry Birds, and even she's got an Android, but still, like that's something that she could play on a Wii.
It's on Android now, isn't it? Isn't it free?
Yeah, it is. It's free on Android.
It has ad support, I think.
Yeah.
My point is that these kinds of games, these simple, quick, non-traditional games, are the kinds of things that appeal to non-gamers, and that's what the Wii appeals to.
The Wii is. You're right. It's non-traditional gaming, but it's still gaming that you do sitting down on the couch, or it's games that you do standing up, waving your arms around. It's not something that you sit down and play while you're, on the bus or something like that. So the Wii is even in Kinect now. And, the Sony Move.
Yeah.
That's a third paradigm that we're looking at. You have the handheld play it now for a couple minutes. You have the actual hardcore game that you actually set and put anywhere between 10 and 50 hours into. And the third paradigm is the casual kind of console game where you sit down or you dance around and look like an idiot. But they're not just two different things. It's three different things. So,
well, not to mention with the Wii, Nintendo sought out to make a gaming device that appealed to a bigger, broader spectrum outside of, it's like, okay, Xbox and Sony have taken this particular market. That doesn't mean we can't make games that appeal to them. But you know what? What does this old lady want to do? She'd like to play games, and this Halo thing is too much for her. Well, there's a board game for it. It's like, Zelda, Twilight Princess or Mario, whatever. There's your dedicated games, but at the same time, there's the board games the friends come over, and here's this lady that just likes to do Wii Fit. I think they were just like, let's just make a general product and see how that works. And apparently it worked better for them than GameCube, where they tried to shoot after that hardcore market and forgot to put more hardcore games on there other than Metroid and Zelda.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and jump real quick, because it's the big news for the week. Let's jump back to the 3DS. UBM Technol, how do you say that, Peter? You put that in there.
I'm sorry?
UBM Tech Insights, that's an I, not an, that's not an L, sorry.
Yeah, Tech Insights.
Sorry, it's done a teardown of the Nintendo 3DS, and the total cost of the system's hardware appears to be about $101.
Wow.
Yeah. That's good.
Boom.
Yeah.
In previous markets, companies lost money on the game system.
And I think didn't they report that they said that the 3DS launch day was the best launch they've had for every system going back to Game Boy or something?
Yes.
I read that somewhere. I mean, is that true?
Yes.
What is the shelf cost for the 3DS?
$250.
So yeah. I can wait until this goes down to like 175?
If you want to wait 3 years.
Okay, I'd 200. Say give it to Christmas, you might get some pretty badass comp deals.
How long did you have to wait until the DS decides to drop its price?
Did the DS drop its price, or did they release the DS Lite?
They dropped it when they released a new model.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's like every other year or 2 years?
Every 2 years, there's a new... Well, maybe no, because the DSi, they put out a new model right halfway in its... Like a year later,
yeah.
So.
Yeah, the DSi XL came out pretty quick.
Yeah,
it came out like, a little after the DSi, right?
Yeah, no, I almost got a DSi XL, and then they announced the 3DS, and I said, yeah, I'm not getting the DSi XL.
Yeah, I was like, I'd like it just to add to the pile of DSs I have, but it's like, guys, you got to slow down. Have you seen gas prices? It's like one every year.
But yeah, so $100, I mean, that's good for Nintendo. Not necessarily good for the consumer. I would prefer to see it closer to, you know, what they're actually charging. But, you know, you're Nintendo.
Yeah, but the Wii was, like, what, less than $100, and it sold for $250. They're just doing the same thing.
Yeah, they are.
They're just making, like I said, consumer
product. But the thing is, the Wii, for to begin with, printed money. And, of course, this is the best launch they've had. But except for the fact that in Nintendo's next handheld console, which is always a huge seller, I don't see the technology being a big hook where it was for the Wii. Of course, they don't need it to be. They were so far behind on the console market that they needed something like that. Where this is still more iterative than revolutionary, which they can, you know, that's all that matters. They just need to put out a new system because it's free money.
It's like I've been saying. As cool as games keep looking, there's going to be a plateau. It's going to hit. People stop caring. It's like, great. He looks really real for an imaginary character, but it's the same game, so they have to offer something. Like, no Nintendo handhelds. There's always some hook to it.
I think we've hit that point, and I think that's why we've got Kinect and we've got PlayStation Move, honestly.
Yeah, they're literally like, you know what? Let's actually go backwards, too, because that worked for Nintendo, because it's like, yeah, people are not interested in getting a PS4 at this point.
I don't want a PS4 or a Xbox 720.
I got my Xbox 360 in 05 on release day, okay? All I thought was, everything's got a little extra white.
We're absolutely getting into our topic, too.
So let's go ahead and jump ahead. Hey, JD, you wanted to talk about Rift?
Yes. So, this came out a few weeks ago. This is the latest MMO. Rift, as far as MMO goes, on the surface, it seems pretty standard. The couple of interesting things about this game. The basic concept is you have two factions. You have, Defiant and Guardians, which you could say good guys and bad guys, but it's not really.
The Guardians and the Renegades?
No. But close. Guardians are like closer to the gods and like affinity to the gods, whereas like the Defiant are more like technology based, like steampunk kind of stuff. So, anyway, mechanically, the way the game works is essentially it's just the two factions are fighting. There's like a third faction, which is all NPC based. That is what the Rifts are. The Rifts are breaks in the dimensional planes where like the dragons and stuff are. Anyway, the way that works functionally in the game is as you're moving through the world, rifts will open up. And when a rift opens up, you and other players that are in the area can join in, and you have to fight the monsters and things that come out of the rift. And then once you've beat that, then the rift will close and then you get big prizes. Essentially, what Rift has done is really pull together some of the best elements of some of the best MMOs of the last 5-10 years and sort of put them all together into one game with a few extra features. So, for example, all of your movement, the way that your screen is laid out, all of those things, very much like World of Warcraft. So if you played World of Warcraft, it's very easy to get into, very easy to move through the game. The rifts work a lot like the what were called the public quests in Warhammer. So essentially, public quests in Warhammer were repeatable, localized quests where people would join in and then you would get gear once all the event was completed. Rifts are very similar to that as far as the gear and things that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And then you actually get a sort of currency from that that you can use to buy other gear as well. The really, really standout thing about the game is the way that the class mechanics work. The typical MMO strategy has been you have class archetypes, which would be like a stealthing class, a healing class, a tank class, and a casting class of some sort. And then from there, those would be the archetypes. Then you have classes from there, like a mage or a druid or a cleric, a warrior, something along those lines. What Rift has done is sort of deconstructed that. You start with picking one of four of those archetypes, cleric, warrior, stealthing, rogue class, or a what they call a magic class or a casting class. From there, as you level up and you do quests, you're able to select from a variety of souls. Those souls have different skills, and you get up to three at a time. So what that has the effect of is allowing you to fully customize your character as that character levels up. So as an example, like if you were playing World of Warcraft and you were playing a mage, you have fire damage, ice damage, and arcane damage.
Mm-hmm.
As a warlock, you would have demonology like a pet, you would have fire damage, and you would have like dark magic. Okay. With this system, instead of having to pick between playing a mage or playing a warlock, you could actually mix and match. So you could have arcane magic, you could have a pet, and
one
you could
character
have
or like as a team or something.
I'm sorry?
Is it like as far as like you can have one character that has like those types of magic or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you pick your main class and then you pick the three kinds of attributes that you want to go with that. It's complete divergence from any other game. Typically with a game, when you have a class, like that class has a specific set of skills. But with this, you're actually constructing your class when you're making your character.
That sounds awesome. And from I don't MMO, but from my limited experience playing Dungeons and Dragons, I mean, that totally makes sense to me and does actually sound pretty compelling. Is that compelling enough for someone, though, to want to leave, like, World of Warcraft, or is it?
It's been compelling enough for me, and I was talking with another friend of mine at work who also played WoW, and he even said as he's played along, he's been very impressed with the way the game system works. The thing with WoW is, for example, and like I said, I played a mage, so it's what I have a lot of experience with when I played WoW. When you play a mage, if you want to do high-level damage, if you want to be really effective in your class, there's basically one spec. So it's like, if you play a mage, this is how you have to spec your character this particular way in order to be effective.
So it adds, like, dimensionality, this sounds
yes.
like.
Yes, in this, you can mix and match those subsets and get a lot of playability out of it. Some things you even get just because what they call the zero ability. Like, for example, like if you're a cleric and you become a druid, at first level of being a druid, even if you don't spec in it, you get like a little fairy familiar, and it has healing abilities. It'll heal you or your group members. So just having that, like without even speccing in it, is worth it.
Cool.
Your explanation of specking to something like a specific spec kind of confuses me a little bit. What's the advantage of not specking your characters to a specific specification if you have a certain class? What's the advantage of being creative and doing other things with it?
The difference in, say, Rift is that there aren't those what they call cookie cutter specs.
There's no standard rote way of doing it that
correct.
Like people have been doing it for years.
Right. If you're and that's the difference between and that's what would stand out for say someone that plays WoW and why they might want to try out Rift is because in WoW you you play a class, you have to spec this particular way in order to be effective.
You can, like, transfer what you know from Dungeons & Dragons directly to WoW, and, like, as far as speccing characters and basically gameplay.
So there's... Yeah. So the difference... Oh, I'm sorry. So the difference between that and Rift is that Rift, you can goof around and see how everything works out.
Yeah. Yeah, you can mix and match different elements together to try to get different spells, different abilities, and they're all very viable, all very effective.
It's like having a pair of pants that you really love, but they're really tight, and you've worn them for years, and now you're wearing a looser pair of pants that you also like, but for a different reason.
Yeah.
That's the lamest possible metaphor that I've ever come up with.
The difference is that it's like having a pair of pants that's one pair of pants, but it can be dress pants or sweatpants or whatever.
Sweatpants are dress pants, as far as I'm concerned.
Or the pair of pants that are long pants, and then if you unzip them, boom, they're short.
Yes, like the three. Yes, like sort of like that. But, but yeah, I mean, like I said, if you've played WoW and you liked WoW, highly suggest you try out Rift.
I think Rob has a question.
You guys are talking about comparing it to Dungeons and Dragons. Is this linked to the old pen and paper game Rifts?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, because I remember the big draw to Rifts was due to the whole open nature of its characters. People would just make it insert role-playing game with insert character. Like, I knew people, I'd walk into the local Waffle House, and they made a Dragon Ball Z character game from Rifts and stuff like that.
They took the system, and then they... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and that happens a lot with, like, the pen and paper games. I mean, those are pretty easy. You can copy a rule set over and do that with. The Rift rule set, was that the, like, I think I've played that rule set. That's the rule set where you have, like, a particular die for each attribute, right? Like a D4.
Yeah, it's made by the same guys who did the Ninja Turtles game, if that has any relevance.
Yeah, I think so. I think that one's gotten optioned down a lot, because I think I played a version of that for, like, Firefly or something. That one got really popular for that reason, because that particular system is very easy to port over to any system. It got really popular with properties. But yeah, no, it's not, as far as I know, it's not directly linked to that. I mean, this is like a standalone. No, it's not tied to any properties, which I think is another advantage to the game. It's not like Warhammer or like WoW, which are tied to a specific property. This, they were able to build their lore, build their system from scratch, and not have to have a lot of overhead with it.
I want to go ahead and jump to the next news story, which will sort of lead us into our topic. Nintendo says that 3D is unlikely for the next Wii console. Imagine that. A new technology is unlikely for Nintendo video gaming console. He says Nintendo of America president Reggie, again, told CNN that the glasses-free experience of the 3DS is important. Component of the backing of the future, but it makes bringing 3D into the home, as far as like a sit-down experience, that's a different proposition. Glasses-free is a big deal for Nintendo, and they're not going to commit to doing that on the next system. So you know, this is going to be the longest console cycle, at least in my memory. As far as the time frame going from the previous generation to the next.
No, it is absolutely.
And right now, lately it's been let's see what we can tack on. Let's add, you know,
the first gen, probably, maybe technicality, because there's just a upgrade wasn't an option then.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's like, well, let's upgrade. Let's add a bigger hard drive. Let's add, you know, motion control. But eventually, we're going to have a new console that's not just the old console with a new fin or anything like that. So
I'd say around 12, 13, we'll probably start seeing some new stuff. But right now, it's like I said, it plateaued. And then we're also, hey, global recession, hold off.
Yeah. I mean, this week news popped up that the Xbox 360 is getting a new disc format. It turns out it's not like Blu-ray or something like that. They're just extending the DVD technology, probably through compression. But again, they're squeezing the last ounce out of the 360. Mm-hmm. But we haven't gotten, you know, a lot of details about the 720 or whatever the next Xbox is, or the next version of the PlayStation. You know, but what do we really see? I mean, obviously 3D is going to play a part in some capacity, hopefully some sort of muted capacity. I don't want to be forced to play my games in 3D. I don't want to be forced to buy a 3D television. Yep. But what sort of experiences do we see?
Bigger, better graphics, and
how do you get bigger and better? Mm-hmm. How do the graphics get any better than they are now?
Well, what about that new Unreal tech demo? Didn't that blow some people away? I mean, isn't that the future?
It looks great, but you know, I bet you could do something almost just like that on the PS3. That's a matter of programming and squeezing technology out of, you know.
Well, that just goes to show you that we'll get a new 360 before we will PS3.
Maybe
this
maybe. I don't know. Microsoft jumping the gun above Sony definitely paid off for it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it also didn't hurt that it was a very good price. In retrospect, it was a great price. When it first came out, people were like, whoa, this is expensive. And then Sony came out with a $600 price. They're like, whoa, I'm getting
Well, you know. Yeah. What this actually is a little bit beneficial for everyone that wants to play when these consoles are out now, because it's like, okay, you bought a PlayStation 2 or an Xbox or 360. After the first year or two, it's like these developers are already like, okay, put the B teams on games for that. We got to get ready for this new system. And they just keep, it's like squeezing everything they can on these consoles, because they're like, there's no telling when we got a new platform to really worry about seriously. It's like, okay, there's a new DS, and the PSP 2 might come out sometime soon. But how about the stuff at home that really sells gangbusters? Well, you know what? Make the next Star Wars game really amazing. Yeah, let's just see what we can get out of this old girl one more time. Because if you guys know, like, usually the most impressive games are at the tail end. The tail end is extended.
Yeah.
God of War 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But I mean,
amazing game.
I really expect to see right out of the box motion control. Yeah, I expect to see Kinect 2 or whatever integrated directly into the next Xbox. I think it would be foolhardy not to. If Sony wants to, I don't see them going. I see them doing something more like Kinect, because Move kind of honestly sucks.
I think I remember reading from somebody somewhere that was related to the gaming industry that, you know, nowadays they pretty much say, hey, we've seen this before, that it just costs so much for them to develop the 360, the PS3, that it makes more sense for them to drag it out this way.
And then, exactly, of course. But I mean, what's left? What's the next frontier of gaming?
I think the next way it's going to go is going to be more iterative. It's going to be more of an evolution than a revolution. They'll probably, you know, next time maybe Blu-ray will really take off, and then Microsoft decides, hey, we're going to use Blu-ray, or maybe even flash memory instead. Versus buying games on a disc, because it's so much.
Are we going to get our download only system?
Or something.
I don't think so. I want to say yes, but look how successful the PSP Go wasn't.
Well, the PSP Go pissed off a lot of people, because you bought PSP and said, hey, here's our new UMD format, and then you came out with the PSP Go, and you're like, you know, you guys who bought it, you guys are suckers. You guys are going to have to re-download these games over again.
I don't think people are ready for a console that doesn't have a disc format or some sort of game. I think flash memory would be great. I think flash memory is great because it's small. But
it sounds like that the NGP is going to kind of ease us into it, because they're going to offer download copies and their sort of format little stick copies at the same time, and then eventually, based on sales, maybe download more.
I see in the next console cycle, you have the option of both download or physical media. I see physical media to begin with outselling the downloads. But I see towards the end of the life
cycle. No, I mean,
no, but I see towards the end of the life cycle downloads actually surpassing that. But the reason they'll have a physical media is because people aren't comfortable buying a game console that doesn't support physical media.
PS3 though. I mean, PS3 has tons of new titles that you can buy download that you don't have to buy the disc for.
Well, the difference I think it might take another generation before it becomes the mainstream is quit thinking about through a geek spring. Quit thinking about this sort of stuff just makes sense and is easy. And then remember the last person that asked you to help them set up their printer where they couldn't figure it out, or the last person that can't get their router to work. How do you get this Wi-Fi thing to work? That's the problem. Someone's mom is just, I just bought this new PSP Go for my kid. Here you go. Mommy, no game. Make it work. Oh, geez. Call the Geek Squad. What the hell? This thing doesn't work. You just outside of the brain. I mean, the average Joe is just like, just figured out how to connect to Wi-Fi, and if something goes wrong with that one network, oh, fuck.
Well, I always liked the way the PSP did it anyway, and they've gotten to a point now where if I want the UMD, I can buy the UMD, but a lot of stuff is available for download. So if I want to do it one way or another, I can. Not everything's download, but a good chunk of it is.
Well, just remember, starting ahead, it's like, okay, the brand new coolest crap Mega Man game, they're going to put that where you can get retail because they're going to be advertising it and blah, blah, blah. Kids are going to want it. Adults are going to want it. The douchebaggy guys that are at GameStop buying the newest, you know, they're going to be buying it. Mega Man 9 that only dorks really cared about, put that on download. Put that on download. It'll sell enough to make it worthwhile.
God, that game's awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What about Mega Man 10? Not
show,
so awesome.
Show it to a non-dork. I don't get it. It looks like an old Nintendo game.
Well, that's the point.
Exactly. They don't... Mainstream... You got to keep thinking mainstream. That's where Nintendo went. That's where Sony and Xbox are trying to go with the Move and Kinect. And with the whole download, mainstream just isn't catching it yet. I mean, how many people jumped on Facebook and were like, okay, MySpace, I got to make my own page. Not doing it.
So, okay, so in the past, new consoles always, you know, they're faster. We went from 8-bit to 16 to 32. Then after, you know, the Nintendo 64 called itself 64, which it was. But after that, you know, people quit caring because the difference between, you know, people realize it's mostly just buzzwords. It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. But it was about power. And, you know, the PlayStation 3 really is about as powerful as we're going to need anytime soon. So, I mean, yeah, the next generation of consoles will look a little better. You know, they may offer more, you know, layers of texture or whatever, a couple more, some more graphical effects. But is there a compelling reason to go from the current generation? We are going to get a new game console eventually. And the Xbox 360... Are we going to keep adding on to it until it becomes the next console? Or is the next console going to be something entirely new and separate from the 360?
Well, remember that, you know, Xbox, you know, Microsoft just pushed out the new Xbox 360, right? So they're going to have at least another couple of years for their Xbox 360. But I think the next iteration, they're probably going to push more of, instead of power and things like that, they're going to play off base, but maybe somehow emphasize types of gameplay, like a new, somehow...
Social gaming, things like that.
Yeah, some sort of like social gaming, something like that, because, you know, they're different markets, but now you can say, you know, when they came out with the iPad 2, despite the fact that its specifications were less than the Motorola Zoom, people were trying to downplay, like, oh, nobody talks about specs anymore. It's pretty much what you were saying, you know, like polygons and bits and the ability to push a certain amount of bits out at this, you know, for the games. Instead of saying, oh, we have this processor and that processor, we say, hey, we can do this. This is their feature instead of, they're going to be feature based selling points instead of saying, oh, we can play, you know, these games at a faster rate. Yeah. Like, I don't think Blu-ray or anything like that is really gonna cut it anymore in the next gen.
I don't think we'll ever have photorealistic gaming because no one really wants it.
But right, it's a little unsettling.
It would be unsettling, right? And it would be boring.
Mm-hmm. No, isn't there a thing called a certain factor? Like, if
it's Uncanny Valley.
Point. Yeah,
I don't want Call of Duty when it's that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a point. There's a point when something becomes so real, but obviously not real, that it's unsettling. That it looks,
I think it's reached a point. I mean, if it goes any farther, I think I'll be turned off. Because right now, I mean, games look about as good as I want them to look. If they go any farther, I think that's beyond what I want.
Yes. You're going to start having post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, stop and think of when you're trying to sleep later at night. It's like, hey, I'm fighting a dragon. Holy crap, that's scary.
Holy crap, that dragon just ate my face.
And you're going to be asleep later at night. Dragon. You don't do that games now. I mean, maybe someone with Resident Evil because it jumped out and spooked them, but at the same time, it's not the same. It's not, oh man, Bowser.
Yeah.
I do not feel good.
Yeah, in my dreams, the dragon's 8-bit.
Yeah. In my dreams, he just pops out of nowhere in the little walkway between. Never mind. I'm trying to remember.
In my dreams, you have to kneel by the cave until the magic carpet shows up.
Yes.
This game sucks.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with our current generation of consoles. Used to be I was chomping at the bit for whatever was coming next. I remember lusting over in like ninth grade, lusting over the Sega Saturn.
Oh,
I mean,
I was actually a little unnerved by during the 16-bit era of that new game systems were already on the way, because it's like I just got this damn thing.
Yeah, I mean,
well, think of how I felt when I got the 32X. I mean,
yeah. Well, just think of
I was right there with you.
Get out of the geek mentality. Get out of the factory worker just bought his kid a PlayStation 2. Yeah, I got him one. He's been wanting one for a while. What? There's already another one?
That's a great point, because instead of pushing it to hardcore gamers, it's now become. It's obviously moving towards the way that Nintendo's pointing towards. It's like, it's not just hardcore gamers, people. It's not just hardcore people
circle.
That play games nowadays. It's a social game now, right? They're kids, they're adults, they all play one game at one time, like Lego Star Wars or something like that, right?
It's so, kind of full circle. Gaming started up as between a dorks and a kids thing.
Yeah.
And now it's getting back around to a dorks and a kids thing.
That's
right.
Yeah.
So they're working their hardest, their darndest to say, hey, you know, like that factory worker is going to say, my kid's been wanting it, but secretly he's like, I wanted this too.
I
want to play my.
I think one problem that we have, and it's not really a problem so much, is wrapping your head around what's coming next is. It used to be that the best and the, you know, of what was coming out could be conveyed on a page in a gaming magazine in a screenshot. You can't do that anymore. Because a screenshot from one game might as well be, you know, a screenshot from another game. It's all the resolution. It's the motion, and increasingly, it's the way you interact with it. Are you touching it? Are you waving your arms around? Are you pointing something at it? Are you talking to it? And that really, you know, what differentiates one game from the next can't be conveyed in screenshots anymore. So,
you know, it's something to point out. It's like you didn't say.
Skype decided to eat Rob again. I guess that
people ask what engine they're getting in the games now. First, like which one? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know that people really. Some people ask what engine it is, and I think that's a very specific subset. Like for shooters, well, what engine is it based on? Okay, that tells me what I need to know. But you know, no one asks that for things like Super Mario, 64, not 64, Mario Galaxy 2.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not applicable. Most games that come out, AAA titles for consoles. That aren't shooters, you know, no one really asks that question. In the PC realm, somewhat, it gets asked. But, you know, as technology gets harder and harder to develop as it gets farther and farther along, that question is going to arise more and more because someone else has to build the technology around the game, and then you basically customize it as the game developer. You don't go in and develop the platform any longer. You take someone else's work. And it's like I go buy Crayola crayons, or I go buy Walmart brand crayons, and that's the platform that I use to make what I'm, you know, to draw my game, my picture. So, but yeah, no, that's very true, Rob. That's true. I think increasingly going forward, that's going to be more and more the case. Okay, well, I guess since Rob is being eaten by Skype, that's probably a good sign that we need to wrap.
Done.
Yes, and John DeLuna will be back next week, thankfully. So for this one episode of New Sound Wave, I apologize for being your host. John will return next week.
It could have been worse. It could have been me. So.
Maybe. I doubt it. No. So for the guys, Brian Kilby, we will be back next week.
This has been New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XV, Lady Rick, Bweebum, with Rob Springer. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. Like the podcast? Tell your friends. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.